It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Each month at this time, we invite Mayor Bill Peduto into Studio A for a live interview. Last month, the mayor participated in our primetime public forum on police-community relations. So it's been a couple of months since we've had him with us at noon. Mayor Peduto, good to have you back. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks, Paul. Good to be here.
You can join our conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EP Live. Phone number again, 412-246-2002. Let's start with your budget address this week. The state-appointed Intergovernmental Cooperation Authority, which has the authority to approve city budgets and ask the state to withhold money to the city, voted to reject your $508 million 2015 spending plan for a second time. How would you characterize this decision?
Not very cooperative for a cooperative authority. So we found out, I found out at 9:30 in the morning on Sunday that they had called for an emergency meeting of the authority. Usually by Pennsylvania law, you have to allow people 3 days notice, but authorities do have an ability to call for emergency meetings. Man-made disasters, natural disasters, things like that need to be responded to. They decided on a Sunday to do that, and they scheduled it for 10 a.m. on Monday. However, 10 a.m. on Monday is when I am by statute required to present my budget to city council, a date that they knew because that date is set at the beginning of the year. They did it 24 hours and 26 minutes before the meeting, which gave them a whole 26 minutes with the emergency meeting notice as well. They had stated that we didn't respond to their concerns of an October 30th letter. They had sent an October 21st letter. We started to respond to that. They then changed it and added a bunch more things for October 30th. You may know October 31st is a Friday. They sent it at 5 p.m. on a Friday. We went with all these games. We played with all their different things that they wanted us to have to jump through. We sent back a 10-page letter, and we addressed each of the issues one by one, our budget director, Sam Ashbaugh, and then they called for this emergency meeting. They had already decided somehow that they were voting against it. They were doing a roll call vote. And when my chief of staff stood up and said, this is ridiculous, it's basically, and he said, you've hit a new low. And they have. Despite that, there are rules in place of how we have to work with them. And we will. And we will wait till they send their letter, which they are required to do, specifying what it is that they oppose. Because at this point, we don't even know. At the meeting yesterday, I sent my budget director up after Mr. Ackland got them to at least allow us to address some of the questions and had him and I had 10 staff members there to address every one of the questions they had. They had no questions. They asked no questions. And then they took the vote and by a 3-1 vote, voted to vote down the budget.
Why all this gamesmanship? What's going on here?
Well, I think part of it is that this board operates under the will of the state, and it has to be able to show that they are producing something in order to be able to continue to exist. Without something to be able to say that this is what we've been able to do, they really don't have the ability. There's rules in place where they would no longer exist. And I think that some within the state want to be able to have their claws into Pittsburgh. There's a lot of money that we spend every year in the deal making that we're not going to do. There have been previous administrations that have been approached by this board to sell our water authority, to sell our parking authority, to sell all these public assets to banks and other interested parties that then finance the state legislators that appoint these people. And we're not playing the game. And that's what it comes down to. And they're flexing their muscle now. And this is what happens when culture change clashes. It's sort of like clouds hitting into the sky and lightning happens. And you know what? Good. It's about damn time it happened with this organization.
A 2015 budget has to be approved by December 31st, correct?
Yes, but again, this is where their rules don't even mesh with their own mission statement nor with the ICA agreement that created them. They do not get to approve the budgets. They do not get to tell council what council has to do. What they do And they do not get to trump the home rule charter of the city of Pittsburgh. What they do and what they get is to be able to see the budget before we submit it to council. And at that point, they can say it's good or it's bad and we want to see this happen. Council has every ability to change it. Whatever we submit to council, they still act on their own to approve a budget. It's one of the two functions of city council, to hold hearings and investigations and to do the budget. Those are the first two listed under the home rule charter. And council can completely change whatever ICA may have approved. And then it would go back to the ICA to get that approval. So what they're trying to do is say, we want to see all these things done. We want to see everything happen, and then we'll approve it. Well, that's being the judge and the jury, and you don't get to be both. They get to be the jury. They get to be able to say, this is a budget that we approve. It now goes on to council, and we're recommending that that change happens. But what they don't get to do is make all those changes happen. That's still a power that's vested with the city council.
So if they don't approve it by the end of the year, then what happens?
Well, if they give a negative recommendation and the calendar will actually start anew once we get that letter. And then we have 15 days to respond to that, and then they have another 15 days to do it. So we're basically – the timeline will be now more parallel to the council schedule, which will be easier for us because one of the things that they wanted was to know what the millage rate would be. But we don't even know from the county yet what the value of our property is in order to set a millage rate in order to be able to determine how much money we're making. So we told them, this is how much money we're going to go after. This is what the property tax will produce in 2015. Once we know what the value is, it's simple division. It's dividing that number by the total value gives you the millage. But we're not going to guess, and we're not going to come back to the taxpayers a year from now and say, we need to do another millage adjustment. We need to do another millage adjustment. We have major properties, tens of millions of dollars, that are before the property reassessment. To guess what that millage rate would be without getting that numbers from the county would be foolish. But now that we're on that schedule, it should be able to be there. If they approve and the council approves and the budget's done and everything moves on. If the council approves and they disapprove, then it goes to the state, and the state can decide whether or not to withhold funds, but we would still have the opportunity to lobby and to make our case. And hopefully it wouldn't be within 24 hours on a Sunday during a time period when the budget address requires the mayor to be there. But the state would be more respectful and then would take the information that we give, like we gave to them, and use it and not try to abuse it.
And it sounds like the 2015 budget could mean – higher property taxes and higher parking rates.
Well, it's definitely going to mean that there's going to be a millage adjustment. And why I say that is, and why I don't just call it directly a property rate increase, is because in 2004, we actually received more from property taxes than we receive today. Let me say that again. 10 years ago, we had more money coming in the city than we have today. And the reason because of that, 2004, 2005 an increase, 6 an increase, 7 an increase, 8 increase, because property values increase. So, of course, your property money is going to go up as well. And that's how we fund city government. I mean, that's our major source of revenue. And then in 2012, there was a reduction in the millage rate when the new property reassessments came. And it was supposed to stay consistent, but it went way down, receiving $10 million less a year than we had received before. Massive reduction that was basically estimated too much by the previous administration. So just like the schools did, just like the county did, the city now needs to readjust that millage rate in order to be able to make it so that we're back on the trajectory where we were before. That has to happen because you can't operate a city and receive less in funds through your major source of revenue than you did 10 years ago. Just like you can't, as a person, go to a bank for a home equity loan and say, hey, I'd like a home equity loan. Oh, yeah, by the way, I'm making less money than I did 10 years ago. The bank's going to dismiss you. Bond agencies are going to dismiss a city. The city's bond rating is going to go down because its major source of revenue is below where it should be, and it's going to cost us more money, not less, in order to try to make that up. Keeping that hole in the budget would be akin to reducing about 10% of our public works department, not hiring another 40 or 50 police officers. cutting out the entire Department of Planning. I mean, this is a significant amount that we've short ourselves from, and we have to make that up. With parking, we have different options, and we're being very open to council on how they want to approach it. We started something around Carnegie Mellon University called dynamic pricing, which basically means that you pay more for the areas that are more conducive, there is more demand, and you pay less for the other areas. What it has resulted in is more people parking around Carnegie Mellon University. Two professors have been tracking this very closely. With technology, we can actually upgrade this and be able to do dynamic pricing by hour to find where the greatest demand is by certain hours and charge a quarter or 50 cents more. And then when it's lower, lowering the rate, helping to keep it where you want to be. You want to have about 80% of the meters full at all times. That's the optimum. If you have 100%, then you're charging too little. If you have 50%, then you're charging too much. If you have 80%, there's a flow where people can get into the businesses, use the meters for what they're supposed to be, temporary parking, and allow people to get in and out. And we can really start to create a pretty great program in the city in our most highly dense trafficked areas. So I don't want council just to raise a meter price. I'm hoping that we can work on this on a more creative and innovative way.
412-246-2002 if you want to join the conversation with Mayor Bill Peduto here on Essential Pittsburgh. Let's go to Ted in Mount Washington. Ted, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
How you guys doing? How you doing, Mayor?
Hey, doing pretty good, Ted.
Hey, real quick, here's two questions I don't understand. How can you create a budget without a long-term agreement with nonprofits? To me, your budget is incomplete. And number two, when you got elected, you lobbied the governor to have state oversight, which is Act 47, which means the city is still under distress. So to me, you can't have it both ways.
Yeah, no, Ted, there's two different groups, though. There's Act 47, which we just worked with to get a five-year plan to be able to keep our budget stable. Then there's this other group that I'm talking about, ICA. If we didn't keep Act 47, if my lobbying would have failed, all we'd have been left with was this group, ICA, which uses this as a political tool, not the financial ability that the Act 47 has. So it was absolutely essential that we kept Act 47. Otherwise, ICA would be telling us what to do, and God knows what would be happening if we didn't have Act 47 there. And there were those that were trying to get rid of Act 47 for that same political purpose. On the second issue, the nonprofits are not going to contribute to the city's budget, and that's a non-starter. So under state law, there is nothing we can do to compel them even to voluntarily give money. Since 1995 through Act 55, municipalities in the state of Pennsylvania can't even get nonprofits to give voluntarily. We can't even get that, even with our little tin cup out asking for quarters. There's nothing that can do to do that. However, we're in conversations with them to create almost like a Pittsburgh promise of a separate fund that doesn't pay the day-to-day operations of the city, but takes care of the long-standing, the big problems that are going to hurt this city in the long term. Our pensions, our debt, our capital budget with our roads falling apart and everything else, and at the same time, take care of neighborhoods that haven't seen any development happen and also take care of all the good things that are happening and make them a little bit more through new economic development issues. We are in earnest talks with the Big Four on this. We are in probably better talks than has happened with city government since 95's Act 55. And I think that there is a very real promise that we're going to see a long-term commitment from our nonprofits, not to the operating budget. They're not going to give it in there and watch it vanish in a black hole or have council decide on pet projects and it disappear. But to create something like Pittsburgh Promise, where we take care of our underserved neighborhoods, we take care of the innovation and technology that's booming in this city, and we take care of our long-term financial obligations.
Last week, of course, Pennsylvania elected a new governor, Democrat Tom Wolf, who takes office in January. What will this mean for Pittsburgh? How does it impact Act 47 and other priorities?
Yeah, it's kind of a good question because there's a lot of different pieces to this. It would have been great if we had elected Tom Wolf with a Democratic majority in the State House and the State Senate and to see an agenda flow. That's not the case. And in fact, some of the positioning now with leadership in both the House and Senate is even going more to further to the right than the mainstream Republican Party of Pennsylvania. So you're going to see some friction that happens there. What I'm hoping is that Tom Wolf looks at the Obama administration's second term when the president decided, hey, I can do this through Congress and it's going to be a battle, or I can find a dozen innovative governors or a dozen innovative county executives or a dozen innovative mayors and be able to create these programs through executive order and create budget line items in order to be able to make it happen by bypassing Congress. State legislature is not going to like that. But at the same time, at the end of the day, Tom Wolf ran on a mandate of change. I mean, you saw it happen within his own party when he created – when the Democratic Committee was going in different directions. And he said, you know what? I'm going to put Katie McGinty and we're going to create a new party of elected officials and party leaders in Harrisburg and throughout the state. And I don't think that he is – wedded to the old ways and the old structures. So I think what you'll see is opportunities for cities and regions and counties throughout Pennsylvania to sort of set their own agendas, and you'll see a governor who will work with them. And I got to tell you, between Congressman Doyle, the county executive, myself, even our Senate Majority Leader Jay Costa and Frank Dermody, who leads the Democrats in the House, we're already putting together that agenda.
It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. We need to take a break. We're with Mayor Bill Peduto making his monthly visit to the program, and we're taking your calls and questions at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. More Essential Pittsburgh coming up. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This is 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking with Mayor Bill Peduto here on the program, the mayor making his monthly visit, trying to cover as much ground as we can, and taking your calls at 412-246-2002, the email address esspgh@wesa.fm, and on Twitter at esspgh, hashtag EPLive. Mayor, in addressing City Council this week, you set a goal of making the city's operations more transparent and understandable. How are you planning to do that?
We're going to start by speaking in English. No, I mean because we talk in government. Government English. It's its own language. It's really hard to kind of figure out. I mean, when you want to build a extension on your house and you're told that you have to go down to the Bureau of Building Inspection with a cashier's check, but you can only be there from 8 to 10 because the inspectors are then in the field at 10, but they don't have cell phones, so you can't contact them. And you say, well, what if I send them an email, and you find out, well, they don't have email because they don't have computers. It really becomes like a closed system. And so we're doing away with all that. We've given our inspectors cell phones so you can call them during the day. We've given them computers. We've trained them on it. We're cross-training our inspectors so that they don't just come out and check electrical, and then you wait 2 weeks later for the other one to come in to check plumbing, then you wait another week for the other one to come in for fire. We're breaking down all those ridiculous government silos of the past, all the antiquated parts of it. And you know what? There's some that are screaming and shouting. They don't want to see that change happen because they're comfortable with it. However, we're going to do it. And we're doing it department by department. With police, we've created three new positions with the chief that are all civilian, that are all tech experts and data analysts, in order to be able to do more than just take reports, but making sure our reports are showing up in ways to track out networks of crime and being able to centralize that information and then taking it to the zones and to the sergeants and lieutenants who are on the field and at the command level. We are putting cameras on our police officers and using the technology. So it's not he says, she says. It's what the film shows. We're using technology in every single department. We're getting grants to be able to do this. We're spending capital dollars where they need to be spent. And what we're doing is getting all that information back out to the public. Best way to look, go and look at the capital budget. It's online. And not only don't you have to try to decipher it like you did in the past, it actually has maps with little dots to show you. Here's the steps in the city of Pittsburgh that we're going to fix this year. Here's how much we're going to spend per each step. Here's how long it's going to take. And here is why it's justified under a system that uses accountability to determine why these steps are being fixed and not others. And it goes throughout the entire capital budget, every single project.
Last month, you participated in the live broadcast of our public forum on police community relations, and I wanted to follow up on what was a very enlightening discussion. And those discussions are continuing. And Acting Police Chief Cameron McLay, who took part in our program here last month, was also taking part in a community meeting in the Hill District on Monday that focused on issues ranging from police brutality to racial profiling. What kind of an impact are these discussions having in the community?
Well, they're tough. Number one, and I congratulate Chief McLay and also Public Safety Director Bukhar, because they have been front and center in meetings where former public safety directors and former police chiefs wouldn't go. I mean, there is a lot of people who are upset that they have been underrepresented by their government, and probably rightfully so. So the initial conversations at times are tough, but they're also productive. There's commonality that happens throughout the city on issues when it comes to policing. What people want to see is more policing. We're going to get to the 900 number, a number we hadn't gotten to since 2002. This year's budget's going to increase the number of officers, and we got a federal grant. We were able to earn a federal grant to hire 18 more for community-oriented policing. They want to know the officers. They want to see them on the streets. They want them to be part of the community, and they want to rebuild that bond that used to be there between neighborhoods and police. Interesting thing about it, it's what I hear from the rank and file as well. They want to be more involved in the zones that they're a part of. The sergeants and the lieutenants need to have more access to the command staff to be able to let them know what's actually happening within the streets. And there needs to be a pure system, a system that all the way from detective to assistant chief, that shows people the leadership path is possible within the Bureau, and it will no longer be determined by politics. These are culture changes. These come with kicks, you know, and a lot of kicks and screams. But I've got to tell you, out of all the different changes that we've done, the changes within the police bureau have been some of the – even though there have been those meetings and some within the ranks that have been upset by it, they've been the most smooth, because I think on both sides, the rank and file and the community, they've been waiting for this change for a long time.
412-246-2002 to join our conversation with Mayor Peduto. Let's go to Sam in Squirrel Hill. Sam, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. Mayor, good afternoon. I had a quick question. You passed the open data legislation earlier this year.
Yes.
To support government transparency. I wanted to see where we are, have not seen any progress, and what can and when can we expect something to come out?
Great question. The legislation did pass. There is even some funding within this budget to order to get some more information coming. We have been in discussions not only with the foundations, but our universities and Allegheny County about putting together a joint city, county, and university open data structure so that raw information that can be disseminated could also be utilized in a positive way. We hired a former Code for America fellow, Laura Maxell, to head our open data operations, and we were just awarded one of seven cities in the United States to become a code city for next year, and their primary mission will be purchasing everything from paper clips to fire trucks, opening and making how we purchase and who we're purchasing from information that is readily available to the public, and also will hopefully be creating a greater competition. The wheels are in motion with it. The structure is now in place. If we're able to get this foundation funding done, and hopefully by the end of the year we will, it will put Pittsburgh not only on the top of the list nationally, but also be with the combination with the counties and the county and the universities on an open data structure internationally.
Sam, thank you for that phone call. Let's go to James in Fayette County. James, you're on Essential Pittsburgh with Mayor Bill Peduto.
Thanks, Paul. Mayor, I'm puzzled by something living outside your city in this county down here. I read the newspapers in the Tribune View. If you'll go back a couple weeks, there was a shooting, black-on-black violence. There's a young man, I can't remember call his name. But in the trip, it mentioned two gangbanger names. And what I'm kind of, like, mystified about is, like, Mayor, is there a gang problem in Pittsburgh, or is it just guys that want to be gang members? Like, not on the level of, like, say, the Crips and the Bloods in Los Angeles and so forth, but do we have a gang problem in Pittsburgh with dope and turf wars? And is it getting back, like, when I think Ms. Maslow or Mayor Murphy was a mayor? Remember you had that in, what was it, the early 90s? And I'll hang up and listen. Thanks, Mayor.
Yeah. So, and James, you're absolutely right. In the 1990s, in the early 90s and the mid-90s, we had serious gang issues in the city of Pittsburgh, organized gangs, and to the point where they're organized out of California and other places. We did a RICO Act in order to be able to go after federal charges, and we put a lot of those folks away for quite a long time, more so than we would have been able to do without the federal assistance. Recently, we went back to the Fed, working with the U.S. Attorney's Office, the FBI, ATF. We had an organization, again, organized out of California through Pittsburgh to the East Coast that was massive. We're talking about tens of millions of dollars, not, you know, little drug deals that are going down on the corners, but massive amounts of heroin, cocaine, and others that were moving through Pittsburgh, and we were able to crack it down and to break it down. We still have networks. I wouldn't call them gangs, not at least in the 90s gangs, but networks of drug dealing that work off of territory. And when territory is approached or believed to be approached, you'll see violence occur. As long as drug dealing remains the most profitable occupation and industry within neighborhoods, it's very difficult to break those cycles. So we're going to the core: education, job training, opportunities, and giving people, hopefully, second chances in life to get out of that industry and into something more productive.
James, thank you for your call. Mayor, the city of New York announced this week that New York will start giving out tickets and court summons rather than arresting people for possession of 25 grams of marijuana and under. They're saying this will result in hundreds of fewer arrests per year. Could we see something like this in Pittsburgh someday?
Well, we're pretty much there in the sense that we give out citations. They're basically like a parking ticket to possession of marijuana. I don't know if it goes up to 25 grams. It seems a little bit much. But the fact is that right now the issues that we're dealing with are more on the violence issues than on the drug dealing issues. There is a correlation, though, and this is when people say to me, you know, we should legalize marijuana. This is one of the things that I warn people about. You know, marijuana is a gateway drug. It doesn't mean that you're going to smoke a joint and then automatically start doing coke and then meth and heroin or whatever. But it's going to introduce you to a drug culture. The people that you're going to be with and the people that you're going to be associating with are going to be part of a drug culture that do cocaine and are going to introduce you to cocaine. There is a system by which if you legalize it, you can take that drug culture away. But if you're doing so, you have to look at what's happening in Colorado and other places right now that weren't ready for it. They didn't put the right way in place to begin with. If you had a system that was more like a state store system where you bought it that was completely isolated away from the drug culture instead of rewarding drug culture and allowing them to operate legal systems, you would have the opportunity potentially to have marijuana dealt with in the same way we deal with alcohol. You're going to have then a market that will try to underprice it that will exist. But we had that with moonshining and other things, and we're able to alleviate it. If you put all that type of a structure around, then you'd have a better argument of saying why marijuana should be legal instead of just saying legalize it. And I think that you'd be able to win the opinions of some that want to hear good arguments that aren't just on one side or the other. But until you have that type of a structure, I really don't see laws changing on a local or state level in Pennsylvania.
New York is saying this is going to free up police officers to focus on more serious crime. That's part of what the push is behind this.
Yeah, and I don't know if that's the case or not. I don't know how many officers that Mayor de Blasio sends out looking for people smoking pot. I can tell you right now that's none. Unless the incidents involving the selling of it, which they're still going to go after, or when it's involved in crime itself. But the idea that there are police officers whose jobs it is just to go find people who are smoking marijuana in their living rooms is zero.
Let's take one last phone call from John in Squirrel Hill. John, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello.
Hi. Hi, John.
Yes. We go to the speaker series. And we bought in the Heinz Hall car park. Now, that car park, I understand, has been privatized. But before privatizing, and that was not that many years ago, the parking fee was $4. Then the guy raised it to $5, to $6, to $7. Now it's $8.
So, John, you say you go down to Hines Hall for the speaker series. You've been doing this on a regular basis, and the costs sounds like what you're saying is the costs have doubled, and you're concerned about rising prices.
Parking costs, yeah. Yes.
No, and the thing is, I think it only rose after that. I think that the car park has been privatized. Does it mean that after privatization, these guys go in for a free-for-all or something? Isn't there some control on them?
Yeah, actually, John, back in 2010, the previous administration tried to privatize all the parking lots, the parking meters, the parking garages. Council stopped that. So all of our parking is still public. And if you ever want to know where the public garages are, all you have to do is look for the three big diamonds. There's the Pittsburgh Parking Authority garages all have three big diamonds. We are still charging less than market rate. We still, you know, it's not that we're trying to subsidize parking, but at the same time, we're not trying to gouge people either. And even if any modest rate increases would happen, we're still less than what those private garages are looking for. So if you're looking for a good deal in downtown, look for the three diamonds, or else go to the Pittsburgh Parking Authority's website, and you can see where those garages are before you go out.
If you're willing to walk a little bit, usually you can find a garage downtown at night. That's $5 for as many hours as you want, and maybe that price is going up.
It may have gone up a dollar, but the thing is that it's still well below what the private garages and the private lots are charging.
That yes, indeed it is. John, thank you for the call. A couple quick things to hit before we wrap this up, Mayor. Last week, the August Wilson Center for African American Culture was purchased by a coalition of local foundations for $7.96 million. The August Wilson Center now has a clean slate. So what needs to happen next and for the foreseeable future?
Well, there's going to be a lot. I mean, this is only there's always been two parts. One is the brick and mortar, and then the other is the programming. Working now with the foundations, with the community, working with the cultural trust. Think of it like the Pittsburgh Public Theater. You know, they operate out of the O'Reilly Theater, but you'd never know that the Cultural Trust owns the O'Reilly Theater because Pittsburgh Public Theater has its own board. It has its own activities. We need to create something like that within the building itself and make it so that the August Wilson Center never is dark. Every night there's activities there. Every day there's activities there. The idea of a hotel. The idea of a new restaurant, those are the revenue streams now to sustain it. And the beautiful thing about it is the idea that the cultural district will extend all the way down to the convention center means that almost like a hammock where you have two poles, the development in between can now start to happen. There's a lot of potential and upside, but there's still, I'm sure, going to be some hurdles to get through over the next couple of years.
And last but not least, I would be remiss, Mayor, if I didn't ask you about your idea of having the word jagoff included in the dictionary. What is up with that?
Yeah, I'm just jagging you. No, I was approached by a very good friend who I play hockey with, and he is the vice president of a group called the Pittsburgh Emergency Medicine Foundation, and PEMF. I've done some charity work. You've done some as well with hockey to raise money for this group. This is the group that basically, when our medics discover that we don't have the best practices to provide CPR to an infant under 6 months, they do the research with the University of Pittsburgh and come up with measures that make our emergency services the best in the world. And I mean that, the best in the world. So they found a fun way to raise money for the organization, which is to get jagoff in the dictionary. For every person that signs the petition, and you can go to www.yajagoff.com. And you don't even have to make the donation. Just sign the petition. Three Guys Optical is giving $1 for every single one. And I got to say this. The only reason that you wouldn't sign the petition is because you're a jagoff.
Are there any concerns?
You get that, Mr. McTrendy? I'm calling on you. Sign that petition.
Are there any concerns that you have about, in spite of all of the good that this has the potential to do, that Pittsburgh could end up being known to the rest of the world as you know, the city of the, you know, that brought us the word, that gave us the word jagoff?
Oh, I think I would hope that we would be called. No,
it's a,
when I get upset, I get upset by like that show, The Godfather of Pittsburgh. I mean, it's that type of negative connotation of this city and the backwardness of it is something that I get. I don't like. But when we embrace our quirkiness, you know, my friend Chris Sandvik said, "Keep Pittsburgh screwy." That is Pittsburgh, and if the more that we lose it, the more we lose Pittsburgh. It's not about redeveloping the Strip District in a way. It's making sure that produce terminal is there for another 100 years because that's Pittsburgh. All these unique little different things, including the way that we talk and the way that our parents talk and the way that we do different things, that uniqueness, no, we can't lose that. And I know it's kind of interesting. If you're over the age of 60, I think jagoff is a dirty word, and if you're younger, it's just a beloved Pittsburgh term, but it's part of us, and that's part of that DNA that we want to be able to take forward too. And I know that sounds really weird, but there's something special about this city, and it's going to grow for the first time in a lot of our lifetimes, and we're going to have to make sure that we don't ruin the soup when we see the city grow. So here's a good way to celebrate a Pittsburgh term but raise money for a foundation that literally saves lives. www.yajagoff.com. You don't even have to make a donation. A donation will be made just by clicking the petition.
And we'll put a link to it on our website at wesa.fm. And, you know, I used to have a gym teacher that he loved the word jagoff.
Yeah.
He used it a lot.
My hockey coach, Mr. Schultz, Chartiers Valley, man. I can't even say what he said. It was part of the term for loving
part
term
of
for me.
String of things. Well, it could be a gateway word, you know. Yes. The mayor of Pittsburgh is on, or Bill Peduto joining us. Mayor Peduto, thanks for being
here. Thanks. I always have fun.
Coming up, why is the sound of water so soothing to us? Does being near water improve our well-being? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.